You're listening to the Growing Leaders Podcast.
Welcome to the Growing Leaders Podcast. I'm Jake Sumner, and we're glad that you're joining us for another episode. Today, we'd want to jump right in with our topic at hand, and that's talking about the issue of technology in the lives of students today. Now, whether you're a parent, a coach, a teacher, this is something I know you see on a daily basis, and we really want to look at the role that technology is playing in our students' lives and the way that they're using technology. And obviously, as adults that care about them, that are in their lives, we want to offer some solutions and some guidance on how they can make the most of technology and watch out for some of the pitfalls that may come with this great technology that's available to us today. We've got Tim Elmore in the studio with us today. Tim, we'd love to hear you weigh in on this topic a little bit as we just jump in and get started today.
Well, Jake, I'll start with the obvious. I think everybody listening would agree, technology is a blessing and a curse, both. Mm-hmm. It's great and it's awful. Yeah. We see ourselves on our worst days when we are slaves to the screen and the pings that come through when a text or a tweet rifle through our phone. But then we also love it because, you know, it helps us communicate in real time. In fact, I don't think any of us want a world without technology.
Right.
And certainly it ain't going away. So we've got to find a way to navigate it. Bit of good news. I think for the naysayers that would say, oh, this technology is making us horrible people. Mm-hmm. I remember growing up in the 1960s when I was a young kid. Mm-hmm. Television was the latest technology then.
Yeah.
And it seemed like so many people were saying, oh, in fact, some of the narrow-minded religious folks said, it's hellvision. You know, I mean, this horrible box that we're staring at, you know, for hours and hours and hours. Well, later, when shows like Sesame Street and Captain Kangaroo and others came on, we realized, oh, I guess you can use it for educational purposes. You can actually do something redemptive with it. So the fact is, TV is neither bad nor good. It's neutral. It's what we put on that TV. And so it is with technology today. I think our smartphones are brilliant. They can be, but they can also be horrible tools. And that's where we need to be intentional about how we lead our kids.
Definitely.
So one quick thought right at the onset here. Mm-hmm. I think we can take one of three positions as teachers, coaches, youth workers, parents. We can either do position number one, and I call that isolation. Mm-hmm. We get so scared of what technology is doing in our world that we just say, no cell phone.
Right.
No technology. Don't get on the internet. And I mean, that would be an extreme, but I know some folks that are so wary of technology, they've gone to the extreme. Well, the downside of this is if you completely isolate yourself from technology, those kids are not going to be ready when they become adults to interface with a workaday world, because the workaday world is using technology.
Exactly.
The other extreme would be what I call saturation. Mm-hmm. It's where we throw up our arms and surrender and say, well, since you can't do anything about it, whatever. And we give our kids MacBook Pros and iPhones and iPods and everything else. And we just kind of surrender to the stream of flow that's in technology. Well, that's not good either, because there's some stuff, there's some stuff on the internet I don't want my kids to see. Mm-hmm. So that leads us to the third conclusion. And again, this is so simple, but maybe it's three words you can remember as you listen. The first one's isolation. That's too far one side. Mm-hmm. Saturation, that's too far the other side. I think the right answer is interpretation. Mm. Let's make sense of this. Let's use what's good. Let's capitalize on the blessing of technology.
Right.
Let's diminish the curse. And the curse we're going to talk about in this episode. So I think that's where we need to begin the conversation.
Definitely. Yeah, I think those are some great points to think about as we just look at this, because there's issue after issue that comes up. You know, it might have been television in the 60s. Mm-hmm. You know, as we went through the 80s and 90s and even into the 2000s, it was, do I give my kid a cell phone? Yeah. How often do they use it?
Yeah.
You know, when they're texting over 3,000 times a month, an average of more than 100 times a day.
Yeah.
You know, what do we do with that? What are appropriate limits that we set there? And even now, as we're looking in the news, there's this story that's come up that Facebook is looking to open up to younger users.
Yeah.
Users that are younger than 13 years old. And so what do we do with that information? Where do we draw those lines for our kids?
And the reason I think it's important for us to do, Facebook is making that decision, I think, pardon me, based on financial, it's a financial decision. So they're not saying at Facebook and the Silicon Valley, hey, I think this will be great for 12-year-olds to be on Facebook. Right. I think they're thinking this is going to be a whole bunch of more folks on that, you know, better advertising, et cetera, et cetera. So once again, we've got to be careful with how we employ it.
Definitely. Well, as we dig into this a little bit more, what do you think, or who do you think is to blame for this, you know, dilemma that we have with technology now?
Yeah.
What are some of the root causes of this, and who can we look to go, you know, what is the cause that's actually behind all this?
Yeah, well, Jake, you and I feel mm-hmm. this as adults. It's not just our kids.
Exactly.
And I would say there's a handful of reasons why mm-hmm. this has all happened to us. Let me just give you a handful that I think would be to blame for this. Number one might be the whole segment of employers who happen to be expecting staff members to be accessible 24/7. So I can't even eat a meal without my boss texting saying I need something right away. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's healthy.
Right.
Number two, I think it's sometimes our emotional insecurities, our personal insecurities mm-hmm. that beg us to see and know what others are doing. I mean, I remember talking to a college student this last summer, and she said, I get on Facebook and I'm happy with myself. By the mm-hmm. time I'm done in 2 hours, I'm depressed.
Yeah.
Because I'm comparing myself with what everybody else is doing, and they're going on trips and they're posting photos. And it can diminish your self-esteem because
Definitely.
You're always comparing.
Sure.
I think another cause of this whole thing is our culture that makes us feel guilty for taking time off or time away.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, Jay, come on. We feel guilty if we're not connected somehow.
True.
And in fact, today's adolescent is connected 23 hours out of 24 hours a day.
Wow. That's incredible.
The average teenager sleeps with their cell phone. Mm-hmm. I mean, they just can't imagine not being connected. As you mentioned, the average teenager texts 3,000 times a month. So, mm-hmm. again, it's adults and teens that feel this urge to stay connected.
Right.
But I'll give you a fourth one. And mm-hmm. this may be the one that I think we need to camp out on longest.
Okay.
I think our human biological system responds to technology with squirts of dopamine.
Wow.
Now, we started reading about this mm-hmm. Over the last 10 years as scientists did brain research, and we mm-hmm. began to understand the brain like never before. But this is absolutely amazing to me. Research shows that consistent use of these portable devices, these computers, these smartphones, cause our brains to actually become rewired. They
wow.
rewire the system of our thinking. Here's how it works. Every time your phone or tablet or computer pings with a new tweet or text or email, it triggers a sense of expectation in the reward centers of our brain, and it receives a squirt of dopamine. Mm. Well, dopamine is that fluid that flows through you that it's anticipating, it's excitement. Mm. It's what you get, it's what I get when I go to a ball game, okay, you know, or whatever it is you do, you know. But
exactly.
But what's happening now is these pieces of technology are causing this anticipation. We're looking forward to it now.
Right.
And the rewiring part, Jake, is nothing short of amazing. There's an upside and a downside. The downside is that, again, brain scientists tell us it shrinks the structures in our brain that are needed for concentration, meaning long-term concentration. I tend to be jumping around mm-hmm. all over the place. Empathy. I'm looking at a screen instead of a crying face, and my empathy's not as high as it once was. And then impulse control.
Mm.
I have a hard time with impulse control.
Yeah.
I have a hard time delaying gratification.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the upside, of course, is we are able to multitask more than we have. I do think multitasking is a bit of a myth in some ways. It's actually shifting our focus quickly mm-hmm. to certain things, but we are able to do that more speedily. And then you and I both would agree, our kids and the students we work with, Jake, they're able to receive data very fast and process it because they're so used to commercials spinning and whirling around and, you know, mm-hmm. photographs streaming through. So we are getting better at some things, but then I think we, again, need to look at the downside of what is this doing to our brains.
Definitely. Well, the amazing thing that as you talk about that, it's just incredible to think about as we're rewiring our brains and as technology is sort of stepping in, it's really playing this sort of substitute role. In a lot of ways, it's offering sort of a virtual alternative to things that would have been real. Like you mentioned, you know, dopamine is usually something that's produced if I go to a ball game or if I'm involved in actively doing something.
Yeah.
But now we're looking at a screen and getting that same physical reaction that a real activity used to cause. Do you see any dangers with that virtual versus real, you know, back and forth that should go on there?
Yeah, I do. And I'm really not a naysayer. I don't know who's listening to this
right now,
but I'm actually very positive and optimistic about kids and about technology. We're going to get to solutions in just a moment.
Right.
But let me tell you the one single downside that has me sobered more than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
Again, these brain scientists I've mentioned earlier tell us that internet addicts, and by the way, there is now a new addiction that's going to be listed in medical journals.
Wow.
It's called internet use disorder, IUD.
Mm-hmm.
Internet addicts which means anyone online more than 38 hours a week,
wow,
resemble the same problems in their brain as cocaine addicts or alcoholics.
Wow.
Now,
that's
just think
unreal.
About that. Yeah. So it's not something I'm smoking or drinking,
right?
But it's something I'm consuming in my mind, in mm-hmm. my brain, and it's causing the same addictive behaviors and same, again, brain waste to happen. But it's just it's a piece of data.
Wow. That's amazing. Yeah,
it is.
So, Tim, even the creators of technology are realizing that this is an issue.
Absolutely. In fact, this is bizarre to me, but companies like Google, Twitter, Facebook are now teaching their own employees meditation and mindfulness, cautioning them on the dangers of constant texting and tweeting and web surfing. Mm-hmm. It's incredible. And these are the people that create it.
Wow.
There's now a conference that happens every year called Wisdom 2.0, just to help people navigate the ups and downs of technology.
Wow. Well, I think we've done a good job sort of looking at really what this problem is, maybe some of the reasons that are underneath it. But now as we kind of look at it a little bit more, what are some practical solutions that you think we could really push into to help our students walk along and to use technology well, to look out for these downsides of it, and to be able to actually experience the upsides that are there that are positive benefits of
Absolutely.
Using technology?
Good. Well, let me share a handful of ideas. Yeah. And Jake, I want you to banter back because you've got some of your own, I know.
Sure.
But the first thing I think it's important to know as you work with young adults, teenagers or 20-somethings, is that adolescents are predisposed toward four pursuits.
Mm-hmm.
So whether they get it through technology or through something that's not virtual, it's authentic,
mm-hmm.
we're going for four things. Teenagers are going for excitement, novelty, risk, and connection.
Mm-hmm.
Excitement, novelty, risk, and connection. Excitement is doing something just for the thrill of doing it. Mm-hmm. Listen, back in our teen days, who didn't go out and do some wingnut, foul tip, bonehead thing just for the excitement of doing it? Novelty, to hunt and find to express unique novelty. We get this with tattoos and piercings and then technology. Risk, the pursuit of of unfamiliar territory with unknown outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
We like to take risks there. And then finally, connection, the exploration of social interaction with peers.
Yeah.
My concern, Jake, is that it's very possible to substitute technology for the real outcomes of those pursuits, which I think are very natural. They're God-given.
Right.
But let me just give you a couple of examples. For excitement, instead of leveraging this to pull, to explore new opportunities, to use their skill sets, many satisfied, as I mentioned, with a tattoo, nose ring, riding roller coasters, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And again, they're not necessarily evil. It's just that it's not quite helping them grow up authentically.
Right. Right. They're craving the right thing, but maybe they're satisfying that with the wrong
Absolutely.
Fulfillment.
Well
yeah.
put.
Yeah.
yeah. And then with novelty, instead of discovering their unique strengths and contribution at work, many satisfy this desire by wearing bizarre clothing or coloring their hair. I mean, we see this all the time. Again, nothing wicked about that. It's an artificial, it's a virtual answer rather than a real one.
Exactly.
Risk, instead of taking meaningful risks that prepare them for adulthood, they satisfy this desire in video games, reality TV, vicariously living out their life through the paparazzi and you know, whatever. And then finally, connection. Instead of moving from to face-to-face connection like we were forced to 20 years ago,
right?
Now they get it, you know, artificially. I mean, it's through screens, Facebook and Skype calls and so forth. So I guess my list of solutions would be responding. How do we help these young adults get those things they're looking for, but in real ways? So here's a couple of thoughts. Number one, I think we need to go outside. I know that sounds very old-fashioned.
It's
that
a simple
like
solution.
I'm a grandpa here, but yeah. But seriously, take a walk. Enjoy nature. Slow down the pace.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, for my kids growing up, I said, as many hours as you spend on a screen, go outside.
Yeah.
So 2 hours on a screen, 2 hours outside. And again, there's nothing magical about outside, but there's something about nature, the fresh air, the experiencing of a three-dimensional, imagine that, a three-dimensional culture around us that just, I think, is a great moderation to the screen.
Definitely.
Here's another one. I think every one of us need to find a place to serve others.
Mm-hmm.
Community service. Let me tell you why I think this is a genius anecdote to technology. Technology, we're told, actually diminishes our empathy. In fact, I think I mentioned to the University of Michigan in their latest report and longitudinal study, they tell us that college students today are 40% less empathetic than just 10 years ago.
Wow.
I think it's screens. It's not just screens, but it's definitely screens. So I think when we get away from the screen and we say, I'm going to serve. I'm going to serve the homeless. I'm going to go work in the projects. I'm going to find a need in my community and actually get face-to-face with hurting people, more needy than I am, and serve them. I think that grows our empathy muscle, and it gets us out once again away from a flat screen.
Definitely.
Here's another one. I think we ought to go on a technology fast. I'm not saying forever because it's not going away. We need to get good at it, but... But again, plan to unplug for 24 to 48 hours. You work with a youth group some years ago. You did this. Talk about what happened there, Jake.
Yeah, definitely. Whenever we would go on a retreat or on a weekend trip, we would just make students commit to turn off their phones. I mean, obviously, we're not going around and collecting them and taking them. But we would just put that challenge out there and say, really, if you want to get the most out of this experience this weekend, you're going to be surrounded with tons of other students that are here, and we're all here for the same purpose. But you can choose to spend time over in the corner, you know, texting and experiencing, you know, the life that's not going on right in front of you, or you can give yourself fully to this experience and jump in. And it's amazing the difference that that makes. Even in a room full of people, you know, we live in a society where it's just acceptable to be sitting there pulling out your phone in the middle of a conversation or whatever. And it makes such a huge difference to go, I'm just going to lay it down for this time period and actually have conversations with the people that are in front of me.
Now, didn't you tell me, Jake, that at the beginning it was kind of like going through withdrawals?
Exactly.
Talk about that. That's
kind of funny. It is really incredible. It's such one of those habits. I mean, you can even see students sort of, you know, reaching into their back pocket and realizing, oh, wait, there's not a phone back there. And kind of, you know, that moment where you would normally just instinctively pull your phone out to check your Facebook or to check your text or whatever, and having to go through that process of realizing, oh, my phone's not here. I'm actually going to interact with the people that are in front of me. There was a little bit of an adjustment period there. But the amazing thing was, after a few hours of going through that adjustment, the students really realized the benefit of that. And, you know, we would have students that would come to us afterwards at the end of a weekend and go, wow, this was just an incredible experience not having my phone or not having my computer for this entire weekend. So what started out as something that was hard and difficult and a hardship for them became something that they really appreciated and enjoyed. And our challenge was always, you don't have to do this when you're just on a retreat or just on a trip with us. This is a discipline you can build into your life on a regular basis.
And it will be liberating.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, and here's a way you can practice this at home. We, again, at my house, we would actually say cell phones are off during mealtime. For 1 hour, we're not responding to them.
Exactly.
If they ring, ping, whatever they do, we're not responding. Now, at first, that was a I was a horrible, mean guy for doing that. But I tell you what, it did two or three things. One, it liberated us from that during the mealtime. But we had great conversation. And I think just the act of having a meal, again, face-to-face communication instead of virtual, it did something for us in our people skills. With mom, dad, brother, sister, it was just helpful. So let me do another one real quick. Another solution, balance the hours in front of a screen with face-to-face hours with people. I kind of mentioned that already, but I think we need to do a balance. And then lastly, one last one. I think one great discipline to practice if you feel like, I or maybe my kids are partially addicted, if not fully addicted to technology, wait on something that you want in order to build that delayed gratification muscle. I talk about atrophy quite a bit, that we need people skills, we need empathy, we need emotional intelligence. But sometimes those skills are atrophied because we just don't ever use them. So I think to purposely say, I want to buy this product or I want to get this or pursue that, but I'm purposely going to wait just to build that muscle of delayed gratification. If we'll do that, I think we might be shocked at how, again, we build out those atrophied muscles and we become balanced again.
Well, these are definitely some great practical thoughts as we've really dug into this topic. Are there any other last-minute sort of concluding thoughts that we have as we really try to wrap up this whole idea of using technology well and realizing that this is such a critical issue that, that is faced in the lives of our students? Any other last-minute thoughts?
Jake, you know, at Growing Leaders, our most popular curriculum is Habitudes. Habitudes are simply images that form leadership habits and attitudes. Let me share in just a couple minutes some images that I think might inform us as adults as we help lead our kids. The first one is found in the first book of the Habitudes series. It's called Personal Laptop. And I simply argue that our minds are just like personal laptops. They go with us everywhere we go. They're portable.
No.
They store all the data that we put inside, and they can only store data that we have put inside. Good or bad, wicked or wonderful, whatever, they store the information. So we need to be careful what we're putting on our laptop. We need to be careful what we're putting in our minds. Mm-hmm. I think garbage in, garbage out.
Exactly.
So we need to be careful. Here's another image, the discipline bridge. Mm-hmm. That simply teaches us that no matter where we want to get to in our life, we're probably going to have to cross a bridge called discipline.
Yeah.
We're probably not going to win the lottery. We're probably not going to win $1 million or inherit a fortune or whatever. We're probably going to have to cross a bridge called discipline. That means that even though I live in a world of speed and convenience, thanks to my screen, I need to build out this delayed gratification thing and just discipline myself to wait and to do some things that I might not have to wait on just if I use my cell phone to get it. Here's another one, emotional fuel. I believe just like cars run on gas, I think great people and leaders run on emotional fuel. Mm-hmm. And the emotional fuel are the relationships they've intentionally put in their face, in their life around them. Mm-hmm. Mentors, role models, peers, accountability partners, mentees, people we're pouring into. But again, those face-to-face relationships really act as to help us moderate our technology input.
Yeah.
And they can be accountability partners, which by the way, leads us to one last image. Mm-hmm. You know, we're going to be releasing a brand new Habitude book, our latest one, called Habitudes for the Journey. And in that book, there's an image called guardrails. Mm-hmm. You know, guardrails are something you only notice when you need them.
Right.
When you bounce off of one and go, oh, thank God that was there. Exactly. I could have gone off a cliff. I think we need to put standards in our life and perhaps people in our life that work as guardrails to keep us on that path we want to stay on.
Definitely.
Usually guardrails are around curves when we're in times of transition on that road or next to dangerous cliffs. So when you find yourself in a danger spot, open your eyes and put people or maybe put standards. Mm-hmm. I'm only going to be on the computer, let's say, 2 hours a day. Or I'm going to only turn on my phone in these seasons, and I'm going to be off my phone. Mm-hmm. Those kinds of standards, I think, really help us become authentically mature.
Definitely. Well, those are some great thoughts, and this has definitely been a great discussion on this important topic. We want to thank everyone just for joining us for another episode of the Growing Leaders Podcast. We would love to continue to hear some feedback from you guys. If there's topics that you'd like for us to address, we're still continuing to work out the program for this and just continuing to have a good time, just spending time talking about some of these critical issues for leading the next generation of students. So if you guys have any feedback, feel free to email us. Jake@growingleaders.com is the best way to get in touch with us. And we'd love to hear some topics that you guys would love for us to address in future upcoming episodes. So once again, thanks for joining us. We hope you found this helpful, and we look forward to seeing you on the next episode of the Growing Leaders Podcast.